Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 1st, 2008. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, Gary Vaynerchuk, host of the very popular Wine Library TV video podcast, joins us to give us some pointers on from his philosophy of tasting. Usually it's wine that passes Gary's palate, but we sent him some homebrewed beers to challenge his taste buds. Well, if you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. I'm feeling better this week, thanks. hope I'm sounding a little better. I even felt good enough to build some hop trellises this week, and you can see proof of that on this week's Basic Brewing video podcast. Steve joined me in the hop yard to watch my OSHA unapproved construction techniques and to check out how my hops are coming, and you can see that too on this week's show. Hops are coming along. I hope we've gotten the cold snaps out of the way for this year. Here's a reminder for you. National Homebrew Day is coming up this weekend, Saturday, May 3rd. You can go to beertown.org and check out the details with the Brewers Association and the American Homebrewers Association, along with recipes for this year's Big Brew beers, Chiswick Bitter, which is in honor of Michael Jackson, and Fill in the Hop Blonde Ale, which is a recipe from Charlie Papazian, which gives you the flexibility of adding whatever hops you choose, which is handy in this time of hop shortage. And I forgot to mention last week our call for email concerning what cheeses you off as a home brewer or beer lover. If there's something that you hear non-beer people say that rubs you the wrong way, let us know. I think that would make a fun show. You can send those to james@basicbrewing.com or just use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Well, speaking of mail, let's get into the mailbag since it's been a while. I'm feeling better, feeling like answering some emails. Dale from Hillsboro, North Carolina writes, "Attenuating minds want to know, if you brew with extracts, it's called extract brewing. If you brew with just grains, it's called all-grain brewing. If you brew with extracts with a grain mash supplement, it's called partial mash brewing. So, what do you call it if you brew with a grain and have an extract supplement, besides just doing a smart thing when you miss original gravity?" Dale says, "Is that partial extract brewing?" Well, I think so. I think so, Dale. I think you've got a new term there, perhaps. Partial extract brewing. I'm going to have to remember that. Following our discussion with Chris Colby on home growing hops and building an oast to dry them, Anthony from Redlands, California wrote with this, "I just wanted to pass on this bit of info. In an episode of Alton Brown's show Good Eats about herbs, he demonstrates a simple method for drying herbs using furnace filters and a box fan." Anthony says, "This looks like it would be worth trying for drying one's hops." Well, yeah, I've gotten several emails about Alton's technique, but I hadn't seen it for myself until Anthony sent me the YouTube link. Everything is on YouTube, it seems like. Just go to YouTube and search for Good Eats Herbal Preservation. And there you can see Alton Brown putting herbs between air filters that you use for central air units and strapping them to a box fan. And in 24 hours, apparently herbs are crispy. They're so dry. So I'm with Anthony. I bet the same technique would work with hops. Although, I wonder if the forced air would blow some of that good hop aroma away. It's worth a shot, though. I might try it when the hops come on this year. I appreciate the link, Anthony. And if you've tried that with your hops, let us know how it went. Alvin from Gothenburg, Sweden, writes, "In your last show, you mentioned trouble with the East Kent Golding hops. I don't grow hops yet, but I've been paying attention to my mom's projects in the garden, and as I understand it, you want to emulate the conditions that are native to the plant you're trying to grow as best you can. Alvin says, since the EKG is from Britain, you probably should move your hops from the spot you have them now in the direct sun to a spot that gets shade during the hottest part of the day. After all, Britain isn't known as a great summer resort." It's not? The climate is moist, and there is overcast or rain large portions of the summer. And since the sea is always fairly close, you get steady lower temperatures and moist air. Alvin says to emulate this to the best of your ability, you might want to move the hops someplace close to water for steady temperature and moist air, and out of the sun for the hottest part of the day. Letting it cling to a big rock or wall might be good, too. A rock or wall serves as a heat storage during the night, and it keeps the hops warm and as a cooling device during the day. Well, I appreciate the advice, Alvin, but unfortunately, we built our house in the middle of a former horse pasture, so shady spots are kind of hard to come by on our property. And we don't have any water or rock walls either, unfortunately. So, time will tell, I guess. I may just be out of luck with my EKGs. But you can see in this week's video podcast what my EKG hops are looking like. And they're very small so far this year. They almost look like strawberry plants. They're so small. And what's funny is it hasn't gotten hot here yet. And we've had plenty of moisture. We've had plenty of rain. So I don't know what to do. Maybe they're just not suited for this climate. Maybe they just don't like it here. Maybe to make them feel more comfortable, I'll start having tea in the garden and calling my car trunk a boot to make them feel more at home. I don't know. If you have any suggestions, let me know what you think about what to do with the EKG hops. Besides, send them to somebody in a better climate for them. Jeremy from Duluth, Minnesota writes, I have a friend that has hops growing at home, and he's unsure of what variety he has. Is there a way to determine the variety of the hops? Well, Jeremy, I found a couple of hop guides online that have pictures of different hop cones, because, you know, the cones look different depending on the variety that you have. And there are a couple of guides there on there that also list the characteristics of a lot of the varieties of hops. So when the hop cones come on, you can take a look at them, and then you can crush them in between the palms of your hands and smell them and warm them up. And that may kind of give you a clue of what's going on with your hops, what kind of hops they are. But better yet, you can brew with them. You can brew a little test batch and see if that helps you out. And even if you can't nail down the exact variety, if you know the characteristics of the hops, you can still brew with them and make good beer with them. So maybe, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter what the heritage or the exact name of the hops that you have, as long as you know what their characteristics are and what kinds of beers would be good to brew with them. So, you know, just play with your hops and see what you think. Tim from Richmond, Virginia writes, I've been a home brewer for about 5 years, and I recently made the move from extract to all grain. I had reasonable success with my first four or five batches, but my last two batches were not even drinkable. And I suspect that I may be experiencing contamination from the cat boxes located in the garage/workshop area where my homebrewing equipment is stored and much of my brew day activities take place. In your opinion, would constructing a plywood crate with a cat door to contain the cat boxes in the garage be a reasonable solution, or should I begin lobbying my wife to relocate the boxes to an upstairs closet to eliminate the possibility of contaminating future batches? Any advice would be appreciated. Well, Tim, first of all, I kind of hesitate to get in the middle of a domestic discussion about the location of your cat boxes, so that may be a touchy subject. But I do have a couple of thoughts. First of all, and this may be a personal preference, but I kind of shudder when I think of preparing any kind of food product in the presence of kitty poo. Maybe that's just me. of course, I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person. So I don't know. Maybe that's a prejudice. But however, the fact that you had four or five good batches brewing in the proximity of you know, the feline feces may indicate that that isn't your problem. I don't know. If you truly have an infection, I would ditch the plastic tubing that you have and maybe even your plastic buckets if you brew in plastic buckets. After all, they're not that expensive to replace them, and in the long run, it would be cheaper than continuing to brew infected batches of beer. And second, I would change your sanitation regimen. If you use iodophore, switch to star sand or vice versa, and really look at your cleaning and sanitization practices. Be sure to rinse your gear as soon as you're through with it on your brew day. Just rinse it right away. And then at the end of your brew day, wash everything and wash everything well before you put it up. And you might think of putting your gear in covered boxes or something like that to make sure that you don't get dust from sources on them. So that's tough. We want to make sure that you get back to brewing good beer. So if you out there have suggestions for Tim and his cat box conundrum, drop me a line and let me know what you suggest. And we appreciate your help ahead of time. And good luck, Tim, with your brewing problem. Now, it's time to bring the thunder to Basic Brewing Radio. Gary Vaynerchuk is the host of Wine Library TV, and he's scheduled to make his second appearance with Conan O'Brien on May 12th, talking about his new book, Gary Vaynerchuk's 101 Wines, Guaranteed to Inspire, Delight, and Bring Thunder to Your World. We asked Gary to come on our show to give us some pointers on improving our tasting techniques to get more taste out of our tasty brews. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio. Gary Vaynerchuk. Welcome, Gary.
That is absolutely awesome. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to the program. Also, welcome Andy Sparks.
Hey, glad to be here.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
And David Matthews, both from thehomebrewery.com. And they are huge Vaniacs, I must say, and we're all wearing our Bringing the Thunder wristbands.
All three of us.
Makes four of us, then.
All right.
Awesome. I'm really excited. I mean, you know, what's really funny is being like the wine guy or whatever some people think I am, I don't think people really realize how much I adore real beer. And I feel like there's plenty of wines out there that are very much comparable to Coors and Miller Lite and Budweiser and whatever else. And so I think it's very, you know, fascinating that people always like roll up on me and say, well, what do you think of beer? Well, what do I think? I think great beer is freaking great. Yeah. So I'm excited to see what's going on here.
Well, excellent. After we get through with the beer, we're going to open some Yellowtail.
And, awesome.
Now,
all right, so what would you like me to do, man?
Well, let's start out by sipping on a beer, since I've sent you five beers.
Yes.
Which may be ambitious for the, I'm sure, the short amount of time that you've got allotted for us.
Well, that's okay. Let's see what we can do. I can do a lot of damage.
Let's start with the AA, the one that's labeled AA.
Yep, 713 AA. Got it.
And,
now, does this mean it was bottled on 713? No, that's July.
That's my batch number.
Got it.
So that's my hyper-anal way of keeping track of my batches so that I can look up the recipe and such.
Understood. Interesting honey kind of nose coming through on the top of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Like the old honey that my grandma used to make me eat. Interesting. All right, so let's give this a whirl.
You used to make you eat, so you're not a honey fan?
Mm-mm. No, I'm not. I'm naturally a guy who is not a big honey fan because I was born in Russia, and when we came to America, we didn't believe in buying medicine, plus it was too expensive for us. So I would have all the home remedies. So when I got sick, it was force-fed honey, and I think that kind of... I don't like being force-fed, so I think that's what happened.
Well, hopefully this would be a more positive experience for you. So you're explain your process there. We hear the swishing.
Yes. Do you know I swish, like I swish wine on Wine Library TV, do you know I do that with almost every beverage I drink?
Mm.
It's become such a habit. Everything from Coca-Cola with lemon and lime, which, by the way, is one of my favorite drinks of all time, to water, to... you know, half and half, Arnold Palmer, whatever you want to call it, beer. Vodka. I was drinking a vodka the other day and did it, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm really losing my mind. It's just ridiculously subconscious. So this is pretty good, really clean. I mean, it's got nice finish, really some nice length to it. And, again, I love the nose.
Which one is this, James?
This is the Amarillo Ale. This is made with Amarillo hops.
Very nice. I mean, and the hops are real. You know, on the finish, it's got some nice, you know, what would I refer to as almost like a tannic style. You know, the bitterness, the on the finish. But but they it only has it makes a cameo and then it cleans out on the finish. Pretty good.
Well, good. That's good.
Maybe a little light for my style, for mm-hmm. what I tend to normally drink.
Well, that's a very simple beer. I actually brewed that for our video podcast one day. So
very cool.
That only went through a 15-minute boil with lots of hops added, so that you get you get the bitterness and you get some of the hop aroma and hop flavor from those wonderful Amarillo hops.
Very cool.
We kind of wanted to start you out light. Start you loosening up your tongue a little bit.
Climb the ladder. Okay, where do you want me to go next?
Let's talk about it. We're here to gain knowledge,
okay,
Gary. We're here to learn from the master.
Well, obviously, I think there's a lot of people who are going to. I've got a very heightened smell and taste, and this is what makes me love beer so much. But I definitely, am not in the same place. The knowledge-wise as I am with the vinos, except from the standpoint of if anybody watches Wine Library TV, they know that all I yell about is try new things, and trust your own palate. So, I'm always very comfortable. I do a lot of scotch tasting and beer tastings, and always very comfortable to, know what my palate's all about. I'm going to drink the O now. Do you think that makes any sense, or should I do the BB?
Sure. Well, let's go to the O. Go to the O. That'll be a challenging a little beer for you. We'll slug back the rest of our beers here, and we'll rinse as well.
So is this a fruit beer or?
It is. Let me let you get finished tasting. I don't want to give you any clues. I don't want to give you any cheating hints
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
David is.
So it's, to me, this is a very citrusy beer.
Uh-huh.
I like this beer. This is it's got. What I always like, see, when I drink beer and even scotch or vodka, I always bring it to wine terms in my own mind. I guess that's just what I naturally do. So, to me, this beer has good acidity. Is the first thing that pops in my head. And what I'd equate that to is, a Sauvignon Blanc, and citrusy, mango-y, orangey, tropical kind of thing going on.
Now, this is a... Ooh! It's been a while since I've had one of these. This is a beer that... it's just a simple, hoppy... pale ale that what I did was I took the dregs from an Orval. Are you familiar with Orval?
No, what is Orval?
It's a Belgian beer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said, yeah, of course. We sell it. Got it. Go ahead. I thought you were talking as a product, like a fruit or something. Go ahead.
No, but I took the dregs of a bottle of Orval and put it in the bottling bucket so that the Brettanomyces, which is a wild yeast that's in there, as you're familiar with that
with wine sure.
as well, that gets to work on the beer in the bottle, and it dries it out quite a bit more, and it adds some of the kind of Belgian funkiness.
And some of that acidity.
Yeah, and some of the acidity that you're tasting there. But give us some background on your philosophy of tasting. I mean, you, as I understand from watching your podcasts and watching your appearances, on Conan O'Brien and, mm-hmm. and Ellen, mm-hmm. You started developing your palate before you started drinking wine.
Sure. My parents were really good parents and didn't want me drinking. So I really decided I wanted to get into wine heavily at 17. So for that four-year period, believe it or not, I really didn't consume that much wine at all. What I did was I ate a lot of products that were characteristics of wine. I always felt like my whole theory was, well, if you're going to pick up what watermelon tastes like, shouldn't you actually have a watermelon? And so I went on this mission to eat grass and dirt and cigars and goji berries and cassis and all these exotic mangoes, papaya, and, no Wegmans or Whole Foods was safe. And and that really became my process. And I don't know if it meant anything. I really feel like it has. I feel like I definitely am able to pick up characteristics. And it's a very essential part of what I believe in taste. You've got to taste it if you're going to compare it to it,
So if you read in a wine tasting magazine that something had an earthy flavor with hints of tobacco...
I would go out and dig up dirt and put some tobacco on it and just kind of really munch on it and, had lots of water by my side because it wasn't like I was so excited about doing that, but I felt like it would help me. And, at 17, 18, 19, I wanted to be the master of wine in the world.
Hmm.
It just definitely, it's what I was focused on. It's what I wanted to accomplish.
And did it work?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know if it's just a natural palate or these things helped, but I definitely taste them. I definitely feel good about where my palate is. I definitely pick up on subtleties, and I definitely, you know, call things out that people go, yeah, because I think, you know, that's the beauty of trying a lot of different things and a lot of different combos. You know, I did a lot of silly things like Twizzlers with mustard. I would just play, and I think it helped me.
Now, you come up with some descriptors that are definitely not among the usual wine vocabulary. Like, for instance, this wine smells like a musty old woman's attic, and it tastes like licking a G.I. Joe that you've had in the microwave.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's amazing to me? I can go backwards and understand wines that taste like that, because I know when I say an old lady's attic, my brother and I garage sailed heavily for 5 years, town sales, yard sales, estate sales, and spent a lot of time in attics because that's like the holy grail. That was like the champagne room in a strip club. That's where you wanted to be, because that's where you'd find the good stuff. And you know, up it would always be very weird, right? Like the clothes would be up there for four. You'd have boxes and things up there for 40 years. It would, you know, it makes me think of cobwebs and like kind of like, you know, mothballs, and so like that taste really resonates in my mind. Where it, you know, there's probably a lot of people who have not spent an enormous amount of time in attics, especially other people's attics, you know, and every family has their own kind of scent, right? And then G.I. Joe melted, sure. You know, I put G.I. Joes in a microwave when I was little and melted them to see what happened. And, you know, it's kind of like that plastic on fire kind of thing, you know?
So do you get any flack from traditional wine people for talking about wine like this?
I'm sure in closed doors, but, you know, 99% of the people in the world are nice. You know, so I think, you know, it's hard for people to maybe say things directly to my face. Some people would. I mean, you know, it's just, I think people understand I come from a very good place. I never want anybody to think it's my palate. They should listen to me. And so I think people understand my message, and I hope they do. And that's really the most important part.
So are you ready to move on to another beer?
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's go for the VP.
Okay.
And let's just see.
Yeah, see, I love anything that gives me dark black chocolate flavors are up my alley, and this is loaded with that.
Mm.
Oh, nice. And then it gets a nice, like grainy, burnt graininess on the finish, which is great.
But are you picking out any kind of spices or any kind of? I was hoping to, you
yeah,
know.
Sure.
I was hoping to you know, get characteristics like, you know, that candy bar that's been on the shelf for 4 years at the convenience store.
I'm being too boring for you, right?
Yeah.
So this is really heavy. In the this reminds me exactly of like the black the chocolate covered cherries that my parents used to always get, except without the cherry part. So, but you know when like the way I ate chocolate covered cherries was I take the cherry out and just eat the chocolate, so there'd still be like a residue, a hint of the cherry flavor. That's what I really, really get on this beer. Then what I get really funny is like, you know, like the burnt graininess on the finish, which I like.
This is a vanilla porter. Mm-hmm. It's a porter that what I've done is I've taken. For a 5-gallon batch, I've taken 5 vanilla beans and split them and chopped them up and soaked them in just enough Maker's Mark to cover the beans, and then put that in the secondary fermenter for about a week.
This is really, really good. And you can get like the mocha thing going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, sure. Kind of like this is very Starbucksy, you know. Mm-hmm. And as you describe the Maker's Mark with the vanilla bean, you know, just becomes much more obvious. It, you know, I almost had a Wine Library TV moment from the reverse. You know, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, when you say it, I'm like, uh-huh. And you know, you could just break it down. It's really interesting. And it's funny. It's funny that it's vanilla, because a lot of times for me, vanilla and chocolate are things that kind of cross over. I've noticed with wines even, I've done that where I kind of go vanilla and it's chocolate, it's vanilla, and I'm trying to like pinpoint why I find them like crossing so much on my palate.
Well, I think
it's kind of ironic that you brought that up.
I think in Good Milk Chocolate, don't they add vanilla in the recipe?
I think that's what it is, and I'm just assuming that that's where it comes from, because I noticed it on something not too long ago, and it's just crazy ironic that that's what happened here.
So is there a different vocabulary for wine and beer? I mean, is it easy for instance, I'm a beer drinker and I've spent a lot of time drinking beer, and I like wine, but I don't when I drink wine, I don't know what to say what I'm tasting.
I don't break down beer this often, but it's, you know, you say what you feel, right? Like, to me, that last beer was very obvious. It tasted like, you know, the residue of a cherry being taken out and being the chocolate-covered cherries. Mm. Now, that's from a moment in time. So I think it's a very personal game. Your taste is your taste. I don't know if this is documented. I'm not that scientific. I assume everybody's taste is fundamentally different. I think it's like a thumbprint. I'm not sure. Maybe one of the listeners can fill us in with a comment on that for you guys. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that I'll tell you what you should do. When you drink the wine, you should tell exactly what it tastes like. And if you say, oh, it tastes like red wine, ha, 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 kind of like that's what all red wine tastes, well, that's where you're at right now because it's a push-ups game, meaning the more wine you taste, I think the more you're gonna find your palate within that scheme of the world. I honestly think that if I did this more often with beer, I'd be in the same place. But, you know, I feel comfortable. Like, to me, that chocolate vanilla thing, though maybe on paper for some people when they hear that, to me, I was like, yeah. You know, like, I was happy. I was like, uh-huh. Because, you know, I know that that's how I roll with that flavor profile, with those two flavors.
Yeah, I think we as beer lovers, get frustrated a lot of time when we, say, give one of our beers like this to a Coors Light drinker, for instance, and they say, or a non-beer drinker, and you say, smell this. What's it smell like? Ah, it smells like beer.
That's the same game in wine. The same exact game.
But this one actually has a wonderful aroma, and it benefits from the little swirl in the glass, just like wine.
Totally. I mean, it's the same game. I mean, these are amazing beverages that have complex flavors, and we're just so blessed to be able to fool around with them, aren't we?
Yeah,
for sure.
Now you taste everything at room temperature, including white wines, including sparkling wines, and even champagne. You taste at room temperature. Why do you think that that's important?
It became a tradition I did, or not a tradition. It became a comfort zone for tasting wine because I was buying for my customers, and when a product is cold, it is hiding flaws, and I often talked about it as the cheap beer syndrome, right? I mean, a cheap beer, you're going to want to drink it as cold as possible because it's hiding its flavor. And so when I was a buyer, it was imperative for me to buy the best wines possible for my customers, and I felt the best way for me to do that was to make sure I knew every flaw about it.
So a beer that has a temperature indicator on it that changes temperature to show you that it's the coldest it can be, might not be the best beer out there.
I think it plays to its strengths. You know, yeah. I don't think any of us would disagree that the colder a product is, the less we taste.
That's for sure.
The end.
Now, shall we move on?
Sure.
Let's go on to the BB.
Okay. The BB?
The BB.
Ooh. And Gary, I don't think I hear you spitting.
You're catching me. I like it.
Yeah, that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask was, in wine, traditionally, you spit it in the bucket, and in beer, you know, we want to drink it. So is there a technical reason for that?
Yes, I work in New Jersey and live in New York, and I drive. And so I promise you that if my day today was a little bit different, I would be spitting these as well. It just happens that I've been in meetings all day and haven't tasted wine, you know, outside of what I taste for Wine Library TV today, so I'm in a better position to just drink these beers. Plus, I love the romance of drinking a beer out of the bottle.
Mm.
So I brought up a big glass from downstairs, you know, beer glass, and then I'm not using it because I'm just, which is hurting me a little bit with the bouquet, and so I was thinking about pouring this next one into it. But,
yeah, I was going to say, that's
yeah, totally. But, you know, maybe that's why I'm not coming through with you with enough of the exotic things you're looking for. But, you know, this is what I'm about, though. You know, I'm really about people embracing their DNA and doing what they like, right? So even in the scenario where, you know, I'm probably looking for bouquet and stuff like that, I just get so much happiness out of smelling it out of the little hole and then, just, you know, drinking it. It's just what I like. By the way, this is obnoxiously creamy. I look smooth, which makes me extremely happy. I mean, I love this beer.
Now, our bottle, I think, has got a little bit of extra funk in it. I think that ours might have gone a little over, or there might have been a little contamination in our bottle. It's just a little, it's not as clean as this beer usually is.
So mine is really, really delicious, actually.
Oh, well, good.
It's really good. I mean,
I like it.
For my palate, this one really strikes a chord. Almost, you know, the best way I can describe is almost like you dropped like 3 drops of pineapple juice into it.
Ooh.
There's like this little nice tropical thing going on with it.
Well, that tropical thing may have to do with the Belgian yeast again, because this is what I call my Belgian blonde.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Belgian beer that is fermented with obviously a Belgian yeast, and it has quite a bit of this.
And this makes sense because one of my favorite like standard available beers is the Blue Moon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so God, this is really nice.
Well, good. Yeah, it's got a lot of kind of a liquid candy syrup in it. So there may be some brown sugar.
When you said
in there
syrup,
well,
that really hits the chord because it is definitely the cream cycle of the bunch. Oh, boy, this black monster is... What is this?
Oh, my gosh.
It came out like syrup.
Yeah. Yep. It is pretty much like
so
syrup.
So you poured the big one?
Yep, I just poured it because now I'm going... You know, now I embarrass myself. So I'm doing the glass thing.
That would be the one to pour. This is actually... Is Dave, have you said a word during this thing, David?
I don't think so.
He's the quiet. He's the quiet.
This is dark.
Yeah, this is actually
this is dark. This is like biting midnight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is big. You know, all of my black and tan and all the English beer fans, you know, they're gonna love this.
Now, this is actually Andy's beer, Andy's nice recipe. This came from our Party Guile brewing session, where what we do is in the mash, I don't know if you're familiar with the brewing process, but mm-hmm. you mash the grains,
mm-hmm.
and traditionally, you take there's first runnings, which are really dark and heavy, and then there's second runnings that you rinse the grains again, and you get a lighter lautering, or a lighter gravity wort coming out. And you mix those together traditionally, but with a Party Guile brew, what you do is you just brew the first runnings as a beer, a big beer, and then you take the second runnings and you make a small beer. Well, this is the big beer, obviously.
Yeah, this is the big beer. I mean, this has got a lot of complexity and a lot of structure. And you know, this is the beer that I would love to pair with a real heavy meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where, you know, some people ask me, like, do you see the beer guys are all trying to act like their beer matches with food, like wine. I'm like, that's because it does.
Oh, well, there you go.
When they're always, like, caught off guard. They think I'm, like, Captain Wine, and I only care about wine. This is the beer that I'd love to have with, like, hanger steak, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just a great partner in crime.
Yeah, I sent out on Twitter, and you're a big Twitter guy now.
Mm-hmm.
I sent out on Twitter that I was going to be interviewing you, and I got a question from Scott, and unfortunately I forget where Scott is from. But he asks, I'm sure he gets a lot of questions about pairing wine with food, but I'd be curious to know if Gary has any general rules of thumb for selecting particular beers to go with foods.
Yeah, so, believe it or not, I'm a big fan of Belgium lambics,
mm-hmm.
and I do a lot of light salads and shellfish with them. That's like my one real go-to. I also, with a beer like the O... What was the O again one more time?
It was just the Orval clone attempt.
I remember while I was eating that, Jesus, you can see what I was thinking about. While I was drinking that, I was saying to myself, man, this would be so amazing with some grilled fish.
Mm.
So I could see somebody substituting what they would do with, you know, grilled, you know, maybe even like, you know, mussels, calamari, like barbecuing, you know, just like seafood. So it's like clean, and that just was really, really exciting for me. And then obviously with these really black, huge, massive beer like this last one, I always gravitate towards a very big meal, especially there's something about a good beer with a big, dark beer with a hanger steak that always gets me crazy excited.
Now, that beer that you're drinking there is like 11.5% alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not bashful.
Yeah, and for
you know,
from
I'm
a
like
wine.
Drinking. I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should be spitting this one.
I mean, for a wine guy, you know, you're used to higher alcohol,
exactly.
Stuff, but for beers, that's pretty darn big.
It's a really darn big one, and it is definitely a lot of complexity. So for the people that are, you know, out there that are wine fans and are not sure if beer brings the flavor or the funk or the complexity that they're used to, this would be the one that I would always point to, a beer like this, because, you know, you can, I'll be honest with you, I'm going to kind of sit with this wine now. Did you just see what I said? I said I'm going to sit with this wine. I mean, that was pretty cool. Like I'm just going to sit with this and let it breathe out a little bit and see what it does.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's funny that you should describe it that way, because the style of beer it is a American-style barley wine. So it is technically a wine or a beer of wine strength.
Yeah, it absolutely is, for lack of a better word, bringing the thunder.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Gary.
Yay,
listen,
Andy.
it's really good. I'll be honest with you, at the end of the day, though, if you said, here are the last five beers you could ever have, you got to pick one, I'd probably go back to this one's so... If I was just sipping, I'd probably go with the AA. I really... The silkiness and just the... You know, for me, balance is everything, and that has balance.
Excellent. Well, the... Now, you were saying, you always say at the end of the show that you're changing the wine world.
Yes, sir.
How are you changing the wine world?
Well, be very careful. Remember, I always say, you with a little bit of me. So let's not, so a little bit of me is changing the wine world. What I'm hoping is, I'm hoping to instill a thought process to this next generation of wine drinkers. And obviously, not just wine drinkers, but human beings. I think a lot of what I do has a lot to do with the bigger picture in hand. And what's imperative for me is that people embrace their self-esteem. And, you don't have to, for example, this beer venue right here, these five beers, this is not my domain, but there was no sweat coming off the top of my head because I know my palate, I know my tastes, and I'm very comfortable in articulating what I taste.
Yeah, Gavin wrote in and he said, I'd like to know Gary's tips for training a palate in order to be a better taster. So if you're not confident, what are the tips to train your palate to be a better taster?
Drink. I mean, it's a push-up game, and I always say this, meaning you can read about push-ups all day long, and you can watch people do push-ups, but until you actually do them, you won't see the results in your muscles. And so, start tasting groups. That's why I'm so passionate about that. Try different things, always different things. If you're a beer drinker right now, I know whether you like Rogue or, Blue Moon or if you're really into, the craft beers or Belgian or, discover, try different things. I mean, I remember I was in the liquor business when we had the great microbrew run of, what was it, 94, 95, 96, 97, and that was a great time because that's where I expanded my beer palate because there were so many cool things coming out. And then, of course, there's been more consolidation, at least on the retail side of things for the beer market. But there's still so many amazing craft beers coming out, and way too many people are not recognizing the upside and the potential of classic beer.
So I've heard people say that beer right now is where wine was when it first started its surge in the craft beer, and it's getting diversity and we're getting, people are getting interested in it.
For lack of a better word, I hope so. Now, beer is coming from a very different place than wine. We're a beer culture. We were not a wine culture at all. And so that's going to have a impact. I don't know what that even means. But what a lot of people need to recognize is that in 1980, nobody in America drank wine.
Or people drank bad wine.
We didn't drink wine. I mean, yes, and of course we drank wine, and yes, we drank plenty of bad, and what was drank, a lot of it was bad, but it wasn't even in the culture. And it is much more now. Beer has been in our culture, so it'll be funny to watch and exciting to watch, and I'm excited to watch beer get re-respected for the great beverage it is.
So there's a book now that Sam Calagione is one of the authors of from Dogfish Head, which is a kind of a he said.
We've been carrying his beers for a long, long time.
Well, you're familiar with the book. It's I can't remember the name of it, but it's kind of like a he said, she said thing about, which one is better, beers, or which one goes better with food, or which, do you see that as being counter to the growing of either of the businesses, or is that better for everybody if everybody gets into the debate?
Better for everybody. Absolutely. I mean, why can't we just get along? You know? I mean, you know, beer is awesome. Wine is awesome. Soda's awesome. I mean, everything's got its time and place, and nobody should tell us what and when and how and where we should drink what. I'll be honest with you. There's plenty of times I'm in Yankee Stadium and I want to drink wine. Mm. And there's plenty of times I go to she restaurants and have duck and wishing for a real great, like, pale ale or Indian pale ale. So I think that society needs to chill out. People need to realize that there's so many venues and opportunities to mix it up. And I think everybody should just do what the hell they want, and I think they'll be a much happier person. But respect and understand that the way to get to that happy, happy land is to go out and try different stuff. I mean, if you're drinking wine all the time, go out and try some good beers. Mm-hmm. You'll be stunned how great and complex they can be. I mean, this fourth and fifth wine got me excited, you know? on the flip side, if you think wine is for stuck-up douchebags, you've obviously never watched Wine Library TV.
For sure.
So I think it's a very personal game, and I'd love to see people become a little bit more original and really try to embrace their inner selves a little more.
Well, excellent. Well, we certainly appreciate your time, Gary. And
Thanks, guys.
Even if you don't like wine, you need to watch Gary taste wine on Wine Library TV, because you will learn a lot about tasting beer or tasting anything just from watching Gary. So if you don't like wine, watch Gary, and, you know, be careful.
Yeah.
You might just start liking wine.
I tell you, I go into places and into liquor stores, and I'll be, have you seen, and talking to the people that own the store, and ask them if they've seen your show, and they might not have. And I'm going in there, and I'm buying wine because you're challenging me to try new things. And so I'm in there spending money with them, and, you know, it's so I do believe that you are, maybe with our help, changing the wine world, because we're out there. We're all pushing and helping educate people with wine.
I think the Vaniacs and the Vayner Nation is very strong, because I'll tell you what I love most about the fan base and the friend base, as I'd rather call it, is that everybody always asks me, on Wine Library TV, what's your demo? Oh, aren't you like 22 to 25 male? Tell us. And I'm always like, it's not an age or location or income level. It's a thought process. Mm. You know, rad people are fans of Wine Library TV. Good human beings that understand that we're very lucky to have life in the first place. Crap, we could have been a tree or a tire. And, you know, and we're very fortunate to be fooling around and caring enough about, if we're caring about the subtle flavors of wine and beer, let me tell you right now, you're living a good life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very conscious of that. I'm very excited about that. And, you know, it's funny that I did this today, because I've been giving a lot of thought to incorporating beer much more, and root beer, too, by the way.
Nice.
Huge root beer connoisseur into the Thunder Show, because I think, you know, there's just so much opportunity, so much fun. It's just, you know, I can't thank you guys enough for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, we can't thank you enough, Gary. I know that you're a busy guy, and I know that plenty of people are after you for your...
Yes, three of them are outside standing in my office, and I have a glass wall, because I'm very transparent, so I think I definitely need to run. But most of all, I just want to thank you guys, and continued success to you guys.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, guys. Stay well.
Well, thanks again to Gary. You can find a link to Wine Library TV in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. And don't forget to look for Gary's book, Gary Vaynerchuk's 101 Wines, guaranteed to inspire, delight, and bring thunder to your world. By the way, Andy and David tell me that they didn't think there was anything wrong with a Belgian brunette, which I instantly called and mistakenly called a Belgian blonde during the interview. I guess it was either my allergies or a bad rinse in the glass that tainted my taste buds there. And one more thing, that David Matthews is a nice guy, but man, you just can't get him to shut up, can you? Whew! Could hardly get a word in edgewise there. Just a joke. If not much one at that. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our low-tech lagering and decoction mashing DVD on basicbrewing.com, where you can find, you can see Steve do a single-step decoction mash, and you can follow me through a lager fermentation in the middle of summer where I don't use a dedicated chest freezer. There are also our original DVDs in Basic Brewing, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing. We walk you through the extract brewing process step-by-step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all-grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. We got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it online from us in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. We also got shirts and hats, including our ever-popular Go Forth and Flocculate shirt, or Flocculate shirt. And thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are KitchenAid, KICA0WH Ice Cream Maker Attachment. Ooh, that sounds good. And Rock On, an office power ballad. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We appreciate the support. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dotson down in Austin. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.